Well, thanks very much, David, for your first address to us. There's a lot there, and I'm sure there are comments or questions that folk would want to make.
So I was shocked, and I just disagree with anything you said. It's really shocked by something you said. And I have to ask a question to lay my mind at rest, clear enough. Must a missionary always be a missionary, or may a missionary be transformed into a settled path, or is that always out in a cross-cultural situation?
I would say that the consensus among people who, men of God who write in the area of missions would say it's always a mistake for a man to become a settled pastor in a culture that is not his culture, and he can never do the work in the way that that someone from his culture is. And here's the problem. If Christ is the head of the church, and Christ is the one who gives apostles, prophets in the past, pastors and teachers, why can't he give a French teacher? Why can't he raise up French pastors? What's the problem? Isn't this what we're teaching, that Christ raises up his own church in every land, and that church can wear... The glorious thing is that the church has a Jewish face in Jerusalem, and it has a Gentile face in Ephesus. And at least we never see this in the New Testament. We never see it. And I think there are very wise reasons for it. We have missionaries in our association that have done that. We have a man in Great Britain that's an American, and he's settled down, and he's in Scotland, and he's been. He feels that he's just called to be more or less a pastor in Scotland. And my feeling would be that that's unfortunate, because if he would move out of the way, he would see that God would raise up a man, a Scottish man, to carry that church on. And I know that in the French example, there's no doubt whatsoever. Because of the way the French culture is, because of the tremendous difference between the American culture and the French culture, I'll give you an example. My French brother, who's hopefully going to be called to be elder soon, is preaching Sunday, since I'll be here with Andrew. And I noticed something interesting. This man's an engineer. He works full-time as an engineer. And he's just at his beginning stages of preaching. And he's doing quite a good job. But even though I'm not an extraordinary preacher, I would hope that after 25 years or so of preaching that I would be able to do it a little bit better than him. But what we see is that when the two people know that he's going to preach, they get all excited. Why is that? Because they think that he's such a better preacher. It's because he's French. They're so proud to in the right thing. They invite their friends because it's French. It's a French church today. We don't have a foreigner up there. Now imagine if you had a Japanese pastor in this church, and he'd help to plant the church for some reason. We needed an extra worker, but he just decides he's going to stay on forever. You hear the scriptures taught with a Japanese accent every week. Wouldn't you long to say, I wish an Irish brother would? Huh? So that's the sort of situation that we want to avoid.
You know, this is someone who is an Ulster Scot, predominantly, I believe, coming from the south of Ireland, an Ulster Scot by culture, going to the west of Ireland, which is supremely Gaelic in culture. So if you like, I'm coming from a subculture within the island. Now, is that similar?
No. I would say, well, we need to... These things can never... You can't really make hard and fast rules that, yes. You know, you can say I've... there are issues of subcultures. And in the church that sent me out in Atlanta, we have a pastor from Indiana. Doesn't have a southern accent at all, nor do I anymore. But the people who are in the church who are southern... Yes, he opens his mouth, but he's American. He's American, and they don't feel they have a foreign pastor at all. And so it's not a problem. Because today, the America of today, isn't the America of the Civil War, where you almost see the North and South as different countries that are fighting one another. We all feel that we belong to one country, and though there are subcultures, we have an American pastor. We don't have a Japanese pastor. And so I don't think there's a problem when there are slight differences in subculture. But when the culture is so different that you feel, I have a foreigner as my pastor, this situation is nuanced enough so that we could say, well, maybe in the long end it's okay if you're a settled pastor in a situation and whatever. But in situations where it's clear, most situations, missionary situations, are clear, cross-cultural, really cross-cultural situations. And in those situations, I think our mandate is clear that we need to trust Christ to raise up his man in that culture and glorify himself by showing that he can give the same gifts to Chinese as to Scottish, the same sort of pastoral and preaching gifts and etc. Then Christ will be glorified and show that he's showered upon all the nations these same gifts.
He talks about the foundation is laid and men need to move on.
Yes.
What constitutes a solid foundation?
Good. That would be a good subject of discussion among you. I'm serious about that, a good subject of theological discussion. You know, when we look at the New Testament, Paul moved on. There weren't even any elders. And I want to allow for the special nature of his situation. Perhaps we wouldn't be ready to move on until there were elders in place. Maybe Roland Allen, if you know that name, the man who wrote to Paul's Missionary Methods or ours, would say it's a lack of faith that causes us to not be willing to move on until you've got almost a fully mature church. But yeah, I think it. You know, we certainly want the believers to be well instructed in the all the essential matters of the Christian faith. I would say that, you know, in our case of being confessional reformed people, we would want them to be well grounded in the confession. We know that in the matters of the confession, that we've got a core group that's well grounded and understands the confession of faith and embraces it. On the theological level, we would want at least a core group to be that far along. We would want there to be men present who've shown themselves to be leaders, and even if they're not been formally called to be elders, that we see that potential for there being elders. They're close. That God has raised up that sort of men of caliber who are leading services, who are teaching midweek Bible studies, and some of them are beginning to preach. I would say until you have men that are doing those sorts of things, the foundation's not laid yet. But once you do, have those sort of men who are doing those things, and you have a big enough body so that if two families leave because the man had to move somewhere else for work, you don't fall into now starting over again. You know, if you have 20, 25 folks in a church, you get two people moving and then you're starting over. So you want a certain level of membership. In France, I would say if we had 30 actual members, I'm not talking about the children, but I'm saying 25, 30, 25, 30 members, we've got to move on because churches don't get very big in France. And, for example, in our church presently, there would be about 19 members, adult members. And I would be willing, if we get five or six more adult members, I'd be willing to say, I'm going to leave it with the Lord, trust him. And, if we see them, these leading men develop a little bit farther. I've got to finish some training with them. I'm doing a 3-year training with three of the men, and I want to finish this training and with them. And we're doing hermeneutics. We're going to go into systematic theology next year and pastoral theology, etc. And they're men I can't send off to seminary, but I can train them within the church. So And then we're praying for a man that will raise up a man that will, a Frenchman that will be seminary trained and will be able to be leave his job or and go into full-time ministry. But I may well have to leave before that sort of man comes. I hope not. I hope God will raise up the man before I leave. But I think I've just got to be willing, or I'm going to stay my whole life in Grenoble. And often what happens is the Lord only provides the man once we're willing to leave and trust him with it. And what happens is the local church is very happy to have a paid missionary pastor. The United States pays me. They're helping with part of my support, but most of it is, why should they worry about praying with too much fervor for a French pastor when they got a man who's been in the ministry 25 years? He knows what he's doing, and he's got the right theology. And until I leave, they might not become desperate about this and have to their faith exercise and begin to cry out to God and say, "Oh God, give us a French pastor."
Can I ask you a question that in your experience, and I realize you can't be precise with it about this, but in your experience generally, what sort of time frame should we be thinking of praying towards for to see this sort of development happening?
Yes.
I realize we can't bind the Holy Spirit.
Right.
But
yes. It varies so much from country to country. When I was serving in Africa, I helped to plant a Christian Missionary Alliance church. And after, I think, 2 years, we had 80 folks in the service on a Sunday morning. In France, they say it takes about, and this is humanly speaking, okay? They say on the average it takes 8 to 10 years to plant a church. That's a church of maybe 40, 50 people. France is very slow. Other places, people are very responsive to the gospel, and you may be able to work 3-4 years in a place, do a good work, and move on to somewhere that's near, and come back, so really, you just have to ask yourself, how long does it take us to get those things in place that we just mentioned? Yeah. I personally would not like to see myself spend more than 10 years in a place, just because life is short and many have not heard, and there aren't many missionary church planters that are willing to do this foundational work, and I want to keep moving. There are four groups of small groups of Reformed Baptist believers in France that have been praying for years and years for someone to come and plant a church in their locality. And I know the groups that I'm thinking of, three of them have been praying for at least 15 years, I would say. And I feel it's not right for me to just stay and stay and stay when this group has already been brought to 35, 40 people, and here we have just three little families up here with nobody to minister to them, and we could see a church planted there. So,
what do those families do in the meantime? How are they divided for? Do they meet together for worship?
They've tried to do different things. They've gone to Armenian churches. It's been very distressing for them because the theology was really bad. Some are better than others, but these were not good. They tried to have worship in their homes with the three families. They felt that was too insular, wasn't enough for them. And so now they're driving about 2 hours on a Sunday morning to Neuchâtel, Switzerland. They're driving across the border 2 hours to get to church. They can only do it 2 or 3 Sundays a month, but they've become members of the Neuchâtel church. Then they have a worship service one or two Sundays in their own locality, just the three little families. So they try to adjust, but it's never a good situation.